Good afternoon. Welcome to the court. Chief Justice Rogensack is not here because she has a bereavement. She has a family loss, and she's out of town for that. She is intending to participate in the case. She will be watching Wisconsin I to do that, and will conference or discuss or vote on the cases after she's had the opportunity to do that. So she is participating, just not here today. So calling in re the Partnership Health Plan, Inc. versus Office of the Commissioner of Insurance. Appearances. Just so we're clear, Kevin Keeler, 25 minutes, Stephen Brzezinski, 30 minutes, and follow-up of 5. Okay, please proceed.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Kevin Keeler, and I represent Michael Polsky, the Chapter 128 receiver of Community Health Partnership, which will be referred to most likely as CHP through most of our discussion today. This case involves the liquidation of Community Health Partnership subsidiary, Partnership Health Plan, under Chapter 645 of the Wisconsin statutes. The Commissioner of Insurance, as liquidator, has approximately $4 to $5 million of surplus funds remaining after payment of all creditors and administrative claims. Now, it's the receiver's position that CHP should get the surplus funds under WISSTAT Section 645.6811, which provides that surplus funds must be distributed to, quote, shareholders or other owners, end quote. As the sole member of PHP, it's our position that CHP is its owner. The commissioner disagrees. He says that CHP is not the owner of PHP because under PHP's articles of incorporation, CHP is not entitled to receive a distribution of funds remaining after all of PHP's liabilities have been satisfied. Rather, the commissioner argues that he can select a 501c3 charitable organization to which to distribute the surplus funds.
Counsel, let's start with the question of ownership.
Yes.
My understanding is your argument comprises the idea that ownership is a compilation of different sticks in the bundle. And what we need to do is look at those sticks and determine whether they combined make you an owner, correct? Is that basically the gist?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. So if one of those sticks in the bundle is the right to receive profits, distributions, and whatnot, isn't that specifically precluded by the Articles of Incorporation for PHP?
Well, PHP does place restrictions on the distribution of on distributions to the member.
Right.
But whether that affects whether the member is an owner within the ordinary meaning of the term, I think, is a separate question.
Well, if we were looking at whether it's an owner for purposes of distribution of funds, then shouldn't we look to the very specific provisions of the Articles of Incorporation that answer that question, whether you're entitled to distribution of funds?
Well, I think the Articles of Incorporation provide that the Board of Directors of PHP is to determine a 501c3 entity to distribute the surplus funds to. And I think there's kind of two issues here. You've got the one issue is, well, let's just start off with whether under 645.6811, is CHP an owner in the ordinary meaning of the term? And we've listed a number of attributes that CHP has that would designate it as an owner, including the power to amend the Articles of Incorporation. Even in the petition, the Commissioner of Insurance kind of grounded his petition on the fact that CHP consented to this liquidation of PHP.
Right. So let's assume for a moment that we agree with you that CHP is PHP's owner. And are you then suggesting that the liquidator, the Commissioner of Insurance, should contravene the provisions of PHP's Articles of Incorporation by distributing the surplus funds to CHP? That is, it should set aside what the articles say.
I guess we're arguing that it's not really a duty or a responsibility of the liquidator to determine whether, once it's established that CHP is the owner, to determine whether they should maybe go somewhere else. And I think the problem is the liquidation provisions and procedures under Chapter 645, which are really distinct from the provisions relating to rehabilitator. In the In re Ambec case, which was a Court of Appeals case from 2013, it laid that out, that the commissioner has a lot of discretion when it comes to rehabilitating an insurance company. But when it comes to liquidation, it's kind of pretty much cut in stone now. You've got a distribution scheme.
Right. And, well, in the rehabilitator has greater discretion because he acts in place of the board.
Correct.
Right. And a liquidator acts according to statutory authority.
That's our position, correct.
Yeah. And in fact, your position is so distinctly that he exercises only statutory authority that you say that there is authority left over that remains with the board to exercise its discretion in determining where to send surplus funds.
We do. In the first place, we would argue that, or we do argue, that the board exercised that responsibility before the liquidation occurred. In other words, when it established resolutions authorizing the receiver and authorizing the PHP board to basically consent to the liquidation, the board said if there's any surplus funds, the receiver can request those funds to pay creditors of CHP, which were creditors that provided services for this combined charitable operation. And I think in that regard, they were really following their own obligation and fiduciary duty to creditors at the point when all three entities were shut down and no longer operating as a going concern. A board has certain responsibilities to preserve assets for creditors.
Counsel, how does that interface with the Articles of Incorporation, which I understand to be that upon dissolution, the money, the funds should go to a charitable organization?
Well, I think there's two points there. One is the board made the determination, and the CHP board, I believe, made the determination that using the funds to pay the creditors of CHP, CHP was a charitable entity as well.
It was, past tense.
It
but
was,
it no longer
right.
was operating as a charitable organization.
That's correct. But what I can't understand, frankly, is a charitable organization can incur debts for a charitable purpose, but then when it comes time to get money to pay those debts, that's no longer a charitable purpose. It seems to me fundamental that if a charitable organization is going to be able to get credit in the marketplace so that it can do its function, it needs to be able to pay the creditors who have advanced that credit and entered contracts and so forth with it. So it seems to me that in that regard, the board's resolution was not inconsistent with the Articles of Organization. The Articles also have a separate provision. I think it's in Article 2, I'm not exactly sure, but says that the CHP can make distributions for exempt purposes, including exempt purposes of its member organizations or of its members. So there's some leeway there, I think, in the articles. And I don't know whether it's a black and white question whether distributing the funds to CHP would be a violation of those articles. I think that's kind of an open question. That's been kind of assumed by the commissioner that it is, but I'm not there yet.
So let's consider whether it be a violation of federal law. Is the liquidator obligated to follow federal law as he discharges his responsibilities?
I think the liquidator is obligated to exercise the responsibilities under Chapter 645.
And does that include following federal law?
Looking through that chapter, I don't really see anything in there that says the liquidator shall make sure that in addition to all of the distributions being made under this chapter, it has to also make sure that it complies with various federal laws that might impact it in some way.
When PHP was created to get its tax-exempt status, it needed to make a representation that it would dedicate its assets to a charitable purpose, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So Treasury regulations say that a charitable purpose includes what you do with those assets upon dissolution. And unless those assets go to another tax-exempt organization or the state or federal government, it's not dedicated to charitable purposes, right?
I guess I would, I'm not sure about state or federal government. That might be correct, but I would agree, right? The surplus needs to be on dissolution to be in compliance with the articles. The surplus would need to be distributed to a charitable organization,
right,
which in our situation, we believe, would be CHP to pay those creditors.
Yeah, so let's stop on that for a second, because you're making two arguments. One, you should get it because you're the owner, or two, you should get it because you're a tax-exempt organization, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last one.
Yeah, so you're making two alternative arguments. One, you should get the surplus because you're PHP's owner, or two, you should get it because you're a tax-exempt organization and PHP said it goes to CHP, and because it's a tax-exempt organization, that's okay, right? You're making that argument.
Basically correct, yes.
Okay. So now when the liquidator is making the distribution, must he recognize the fact that the assets were dedicated to a charitable purpose, and recognizing that fact, make sure that any distribution is consistent with the requirements for a charitable organization?
In this context, I don't believe so. I think the responsibility is placed on the board of directors, not placed on the state of Wisconsin. And I think the decision has to be made in the private charitable sphere. As a board of directors, I believe it's safe to say that they were advised by counsel. If you even look at the resolution, there's a reference to Reinhard Borner in there as being the counsel for the companies. So it seems to me it's appropriate to allow that decision to be made there rather than have the state intervene and say, you made the wrong decision. We're going to select a 501c3 that we want to take.
Right, and that's another one of your issues. But I want to concentrate on this piece. You're saying that, on the one hand, the liquidator must honor PHP's wishes as described in its resolution, right, and transfer the funds to CHP. But at the same time, you're saying the liquidator should ignore the articles of incorporation that say that funds cannot be distributed to member/owner.
What we're really saying, Your Honor, is that the first question is whether CHP is an owner.
Mm-hmm.
And if the court, applying the ordinary meaning of owner, says, well, that bundle of sticks, given ordinary parlance, is enough to render CHP the owner. And indeed, Commissioner himself called CHP the owner in the petition and in the transmittal letter to the court. So, which I think is not necessarily a concession, but it's a recognition of the ordinary meaning of the word. People think of CHP as the owner. It had, you know, appointed the directors. It could hire and fire the president and CEO and so forth. It had basically all the control over the entity, even more control than I think that a regular shareholder would have over its entity, because a shareholder doesn't directly hire and fire the president and so forth. So we think that the definition of owner is robust enough, I guess, to include CHP. And at that point, there's nothing else to do. It goes to the owner. And
because the statutory distribution formula overrides the articles of incorporation.
Correct. I believe they do, because I think they're the way the statute is drafted, it's a kind of a strict priority. And if you think of the commissioner as selecting a 501c3 entity and says, okay, I want to pay this $4 million to that entity, well, where in the priority scheme does that fall? The 501c3 entity is not going to be a person with a claim entitled to payment under that.
Mm-hmm. Has the commissioner selected the entity?
Not that we know of.
Okay, so that's not
quite an issue in this case
Correct.
Yet, as I understand the case. Now, PHP is described as a health maintenance organization, so it and it's a charitable organization, right?
Correct, yes.
And it provides health and medical services benefits, drug prescription drug benefits, and long-term care benefits to elderly and disabled individuals, right?
Yes.
But it has no employees, it has no operating assets, and its administrative services are provided by CHP.
That's
correct. Is that right? What kind of shell do we have here? I mean, what is it? It's a vacant nothing.
Well,
except it has $4-plus million dollars, so it's not that vacant.
Well, I think the court needs to understand that what we had were three interrelated entities that were providing charitable services to the same kind of population of individuals.
Okay, we got PHP, right?
That's correct.
And we got CHP, and what else do we have?
And the other one is, I think it's...
Element and OP.
LTS.
PDQ. No, I guess not.
The other entity is LTS, I think it was CHP LTS, which was a...
Is that a charitable organization, too?
It was also a charitable organization. I believe it was a managed care
Long-term
organization.
Long-term care.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they were. I think the intent was that these three entities would work together to provide various services for this population, and CHP was basically the brains of the outfit, so to speak. It, rather than have separate employees for each entity, it was easier and more economical to have CHP do all the administrative services for the two entities.
But they're not trying to treat these three together as really one entity. Or is that really what's happening?
Well, I think you've got, certainly there are legal distinctions between the entities.
I understand that.
There isn't a, I guess I don't know, frankly, on a factual matter, because I wasn't familiar with the entities as they were operating. I kind of came in at the end of the process here. But I think all three entities had the same board members, and it was a way for this charitable group, I guess, of entities to provide a broader array of services to the population that it served by being set up the way it was. So if I'll, I want to get back a little bit to this idea of it being an owner, CHP being an owner of PHP. It seems to me if the court were to say PHP is not the owner because it's not entitled to distribution of profits, then the court would be, in a sense, adding something to the definition of owner, or I would say narrowing down the definition of owner without any basis really in the statute to do that. As this court recently stated in Benson versus City of Madison, quote, without some indication to the contrary, general words, like all words general or not, are to be accorded their full and fair scope. They are not to be arbitrarily limited. And there the court was quoting Antonin Scalia and Brian Garner in reading the law. And I think that's what the court would be doing here. It would be saying, look, the statute says goes to other owners. CHP would otherwise be an owner. It has all these rights and so forth with regard to PHP and can even transfer its ownership in PHP by amending the articles of incorporation and changing the name of the sole member. So the court would be, I would respectfully submit that the court would be kind of going, departing from its normal rules of statutory construction if it did that.
So where do you get a definition of owners as defined in, as used in 645.6811, right?
That's correct.
All right. Yes. So where do you get a definition of owner that makes CHP an owner?
Basically, the dictionary.
It comes into use very handily for this court, doesn't it?
I'm sorry.
I said it's, the court often uses the dictionary definition, right?
That's correct.
Even in a statute that relates to liquidation, like 645.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Go ahead. So what does the owner mean?
Well, the definitions kind of vary because it's a pretty general term. The definition that, one of them that we quoted from Black's Law Dictionary.
10th edition, 2014.
I think we, in our brief, we applied a couple different editions. But it's...
Well, the Court of Appeals used that dictionary I referred to mean someone who has the right to possess, use, and convey something, a person in whom one or more interests are vested. So where does the CHP get a vested interest?
Well, it's got a vested interest in PHP.
How?
By virtue of it being the sole member and having various responsibility.
How is member defined?
I guess it'd have to be as defined under probably Chapter 181 as...
CHP is insolvent and it's being liquidated under Chapter 128. PHP is obviously having trouble and it's being liquidated under 645. So we have 645 and 128. We got 181, Chapter 181. And although CHP may be a member, I don't see how member is also defined as owner. Owner says the right to possess, use, and convey something. I don't see where CHP gets any rights to possess, use, and convey the assets of PHP.
Well, remember, an owner, like a shareholder, for example, doesn't have rights to possess or convey assets of the corporation. That's the board of directors of the corporation determines how those...
I know, but on liquidation assets. They get it because they're given rights under the Chapter 180 to get it at liquidation.
They might, and even under Chapter 181, I think it'll be, as we pointed out in our brief, unless it's restricted by the Articles of Incorporation, members might be able to get assets on distribution as well.
Counsel, your reference to Chapter 181 as a source of meaning for member has, I think, some merits. So Section 181.0103, sub 15, defines member, and it says it is a person who has membership rights in a corporation in accordance with the provisions of its Articles of Incorporation or bylaws. Correct. So if we looked at the articles to determine what manner of member CHP is, we would find that it's a member that has no right to a distribution while it's in operation or a distribution upon dissolution, right?
It had no right to a dissolution. It couldn't demand a surplus upon dissolution. But I don't know whether that means that the PHP board, and again, it's under these circumstances of this joint liquidation of these three entities. PHP would have been dissolved and liquidated under Chapter 128, but for the fact that it's an insurance corporation and has to be liquidated under Chapter 645.
Right. But just concentrating on the definition of member and what that means for CHP, given the state of PHP's Articles of Incorporation, it suggests that it does not have the right to a distribution while in operation or entitlement to the surplus funds upon dissolution because PHP's articles dedicated its assets to charitable purposes, and that requires that it cannot be distributed to members or owners or shareholders, right? And so it seems that if the argument is CHP gets it because it's an owner slash member, and we use the definition from Chapter 181 for member, that kind of aces you out, doesn't it?
I guess I didn't follow you on that last argument there.
Right. So so we're looking for what it means for CHP to be a member of PHP.
An owner.
And slash owner. And you suggested perhaps we'd find some helpful guidance in Chapter 181 with respect to what it means to be a member. And I think it does give us some good guidance. And it says a member is someone who has the membership rights that are granted by the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws. And the Articles of Incorporation say you don't get a distribution and you don't get the surplus funds upon dissolution. So that would suggest that if we're looking at Chapter 181 as a guide to what CHP's rights are as a member of PHP, it would say you don't get the surplus funds qua member, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, maybe you still qualify as being a charitable organization, but as far as ownership, that seems to foreclose that avenue of acquiring the surplus funds, doesn't it?
I think it forecloses it only if the court defines owner to exclude anybody, to exclude with respect to ownership of an enterprise, to exclude any entity or person who does not have a right to profits. And I see my time is up.
That's excluded by your definition of owner. That's the problem.
Thank you, Counsel.
Well, we only got to the first issue.
May it please the Court, my name is Stephen Brzezinski. I represent the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance in this matter. Let me start by saying what this case is not about. It is not about the payment of PHP's bills. To get to this point, PHP's bills have been paid in full. PHP and CHP had an administrative services agreement wherein CHP charged back to PHP 70% of its costs, including rent and every other cost it had, plus a fee of 8% on top of that. So this is not a case about whether it's charitable for PHP to pay its own bills. PHP's bills have been paid. The leap that the plaintiff would have you make is that it is charitable for PHP to pay someone else's bills. And there is no authority for that. Nor should there be. That is not a charitable purpose to pay someone else's bills.
Well, wait a minute, counsel. That might be stating it a little bit broadly. When people make contributions of money to a charitable organization, unless that charitable organization is just in the business of redistributing those funds, it's always to pay bills, right?
Its own bills, yes, correct. But just simply because it has an affiliated organization, that doesn't make it a proper use of the funds you give to a charitable organization to pay an affiliate's bills.
Well, let's say we're in this kind. Let's say that CHP and PHP were not related at all, and PHP says, "Well, I know this organization across town. We're not affiliated with it, but they're doing have done good work. They've provided a great deal of charitable services over the years, and now it's in the wind-down phase, and there are these outstanding obligations, and we want to send our surplus over there to satisfy those obligations. Would that be a sufficiently charitable purpose?"
No, okay. It would not, and it's prohibited by the Articles of Incorporation as well.
Well, let's hang on a second now. Is that because the payment for the charitable services would come after the services were already done, as opposed to paying for them before they were done?
It would be permissible to pay money to an ongoing charity, which would then pay its obligations in the ordinary course.
Right. So, which just assumes the conclusion there. So the question is, though, Is it improper to pay for the charitable services after they've been rendered as opposed to before they were rendered?
I don't view it that way, that it has a time element to it. It's a payment made for the obligations of another entity.
Right. And it's a charitable entity.
Yes.
Right. And so why would it be important that the payment would relate only to obligations that were incurred before that other entity provided the charitable services rather than after?
The payment to pay the past due bills of a defunct charity is not accomplishing any further charitable purpose. That charitable purpose has been done already.
Right.
There's no charitable purpose to be served.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to get you to is, where do you get the further charitable purpose from? Where is that requirement from?
That requirement is from a number of sources. One would be Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code, where a charity must carry out charitable purposes in order to have that status.
Okay, and that's status-based, right? So
yes.
Let's say CHP is in the wind-up phase. It's still a tax-exempt entity, right?
No, it is not. To retain its tax exemption, it must carry out a charitable purpose.
And has CHP's tax-exempt status been revoked?
To my knowledge, I don't know whether it's been formally revoked by the Internal Revenue Service or not, but federal law provides that it loses its tax-exempt status when it stops performing charitable functions.
And point me to the provision that says that.
It would be Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code.
Well, that's a big section. Can you quote me the language?
I don't have that in front of me. But it is something to the effect, I believe it's essentially quoted in the Articles of Incorporation, organized and operated exclusively for charitable, educational, or scientific purposes.
Yes, and
so your view is that when it's being liquidated, it's not organized and operated for charitable purposes.
Correct. It certainly is not being operated for charitable purposes anymore.
And it's in a stage of liquidation, and therefore it, in effect, your position is that being liquidated and not using assets for charitable purposes, it is not qualified under the Articles of Incorporation of PHP.
That is correct.
That's your position.
Yes.
And you're being asked that if they've already spent down their money for charitable purposes and are in debt, which is the position I understand this corporation to be in, and therefore being dissolved under the insolvency law, that the fact that its debts were incurred lawfully in engaging in charity doesn't make it an existing charitable organization organized and operated for charitable purposes under the Articles of Incorporation.
Yes, I agree with that.
That's your position?
Yes.
And what's your authority?
Again, my authority is Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code, which limits charities to organizations which actually carry on charitable activities.
And operated. Okay. So it's past being a charity. It's now a liquidated entity.
That's correct, yes.
An entity in the process of being liquidated, not organized and operated for charitable purposes.
Yes.
And that's the position of the commissioner.
It is.
And what about the position of the commissioner on ownership? Why don't you think the member is a owner under the definition of owner as used in 645-6811?
645-6811 does not provide guidance on what ownership entails, so you have to look at the specific rights that CHP has. What CHP has in relation to PHP are certain management rights to manage a charity as a charity.
And where do they get those rights?
They get those rights by virtue of the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws of PHP, wherein they have the ability to appoint the board of directors of PHP to amend, revise the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws. They have some level of control over PHP. It is not operating day-to-day control because the board of directors, of course, has that. But they have some right to determine who is on the board of directors and to determine what the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws say. But what they do not have the right to is to participate financially in PHP's assets, nor do they have the obligation to fund PHP's liabilities, which is another provision of the Articles of Incorporation specifically set forth. So our position is that at least for purposes of 645-6811, when you're trying to determine who gets the money at the end, a prohibition against getting the money at the end does not make you an owner.
Counsel, let's look at the issue of who gets to designate who receives the funds. Let's say instead of identifying CHP as the recipient, they decided to be the American Red Cross. Would PHP have the authority to do that?
I believe had PHP's board of directors designated an operating charity to receive the funds on the way out the door, we wouldn't be here today.
All right. So does the board of PHP, one, still exist, and two, still have any residual authority while the company is in liquidation proceedings?
I don't believe the board still exists, and I do not believe that it has any further authority to act.
If it did still exist, would it have any residual authority during a liquidation proceeding?
I don't believe so. I think the liquidation proceeding is complete and takes all authority away from the liquidated organization.
The reason I ask is 645.01 sub 4, which describes the purpose of Chapter 645. It says the purpose of this chapter is the protection of the interests of insureds, creditors, and the public generally, with minimum interference with the normal prerogatives of proprietors. What does that phrase mean, with minimum interference with the normal prerogatives of proprietors?
I think what that means is that the actions of the organization will not be second-guessed to the extent possible. So what brought the insurance company into the liquidation, the liquidator is not going to go back and attempt to undo that as long as it was within the normal prerogatives of the organization. But going forward, the organization does not have further authority to determine who gets paid and who its owners are and where surplus funds go.
Is the authority of the liquidator coterminous with the board of directors of the company in liquidation?
I believe it is. I have been unable to find any distinction between the two, but I have to admit I've also been able to find any language that says precisely that.
Right.
But I do believe it is coterminous.
What's your best statutory authority with that scope of authority?
Well, I think, Your Honor, it is the powers of liquidator under 645-46, wherein 22 specific powers are listed with a catch-all power, which could hardly be broader, which is to do anything necessary or expedient for the accomplishment of or in aid of the purpose of the liquidation, which seems to catch virtually anything that the liquidator would need to do to finish up the affairs of the insurance company.
Well, and the purposes of the liquidation are as identified in 645.01, correct?
That's right.
So that residual catch-all tells us that even if the authority is not listed there, we are to read into that catch-all the authority necessary to protect the interests of the insureds, creditors, and public generally.
Yes.
Okay. Now, would that necessarily be inconsistent with a board of directors, should it still exist, deciding which charitable organization the surplus should go to?
If we assume that the board of directors existed and retained some residual authority, and if we ruled that there was no owner of PHP within the meaning of 645-6811, and if the board of directors acted in a proper manner to identify a qualifying charity, and if all those things happen, yes, I think you could do it that way.
Okay. One of the other issues that has come up in this case is whether PHP properly, as a procedural matter, identified where the surplus ought to go. And you say that they didn't report that proposed transaction in the proper way, and so it's void, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Now, that's that obligation, I think, is under 61721.
It is under 61721, as well as an administrative rule adopted under that section, as well as an order that they were subject to that was an uncontested order issued by the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance.
So the obligation to report is in furtherance of the purpose of Chapter 617, yes?
Yes.
And 617.01 sub 2 says, the purpose of this chapter is to protect the interests of insureds, stockholders, and of the public against intercorporate transactions amongst affiliates that may affect the solidity of insurers authorized to do business in this state or otherwise be detrimental to protected interests. So the obligation to report is material transactions, and so it would be material if it has the possibility of affecting one of the purposes for which 617 exists. Which of those things does the materiality aspect relate to in this case?
Well, I think it relates to the public interest. Simply because an insurance company is being liquidated does not deprive the public of an interest. PHP was organized and adopted articles of incorporation and bylaws that said PHP is going to operate in a certain way. And if there's money left at the end, it's going to remain charitable money, and it's going to go to another charity. And they represented that that is what's going to occur. They got a certificate of operation from the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance based on that representation. They entered into a contract with the Department with the DHS of Wisconsin, and were carried out programs and received money under that representation. And they got tax-exempt status from the IRS because they made that representation. The only body that can hold them to it at this point is the liquidation court and the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance. And to suggest that somehow the public should no longer care about whether they're being held to that promise and forced to abide by what their documents said, I think is simply wrong. There is a strong public interest in making sure that they do what they said they were going to do. And this is the mechanism for doing that. To continue on just for a moment, just to go back to the question of ownership for a second, it may seem odd, counterintuitive, that an organization does not have an owner, but PHP does not have an owner. The mere fact that it is a charity, in our view, means there is no owner under 645-6811. Consider for a second, a charity does not have to have members. It can have a self-perpetuating board of three directors. If we believed that every organization must have an owner, then you would have to deal with the question of what if the owner is three individuals who comprise the board of directors of an organization? Do they receive the surplus? Is there anyone else who's an owner? I think they would be the only ones left. So they would have to fall within that definition of owner. There has to be space in 645-6811 to conclude that there is no owner and that what ought to happen is the carrying out of PHP's articles of incorporation as they're written through the selection of charities that will continue on with PHP's purposes.
Counsel, the argument that you advance, the sophisticated argument that you advance, comes to me in simplistic terms. That is, member of a church. Who owns the church? A member of a civic organization dealing with the arts, charitable 501c3. Who owns that? The answer to my simplistic approach is, well, no one owns it. So is your sophisticated argument commensurate with my simplistic view, or do I need to put further elaboration on my simplistic analogies to meet your elegant and sophisticated argument?
I think I would not agree with it simplistic. I agree it is exactly right. We're looking at the dictionary definition of owner. So why isn't that relevant to say that a church has no owner? Why isn't it relevant to say that the symphony has no owner? The language of ownership does not fit well with charitable organizations. It simply doesn't apply. There doesn't have to be an owner of a charity. And so the answer to all of those questions is, yes, there is no owner. As a matter of common sense, as a matter of dictionary definition, charities are just different animals. They serve a public purpose. The commitment of resources to a charity is permanent. It is not like a shareholder who expects a return on their investment and to be paid the surplus. That is just simply not the way charities work.
For whatever reason, there are three entities here. They could have been one.
I don't think they could have.
Okay,
actually,
why not?
Well, because one of them is an insurance company.
Right.
Which has to meet the requirements of Wisconsin
law for
insurance.
But it's a charitable organization anyway.
It is, absolutely.
Okay.
So I don't think they could have operated as one organization. I think they were unable to.
Why did they have to hire CHP to do administrative work? It could have done it by itself. Never organized CHP.
I don't know enough about what, if anything, CHP did directly other than provide administrative services to answer the question.
So they've set up an administrative entity also,
yes,
a 501c3. They could have just hired their own employees and done their own administration.
I think that's true, but they this sort of model is very common in the charitable or the business world where you have related organizations.
But now that they're in financial difficulty, it seems to me that the goal is to try and put them all back together again and pay obligations of CHP from PHP, PHP.
I think that's exactly right. The receiver for CHP,
right,
is of the view that they can be viewed together as,
right,
one, and we don't believe there's any authority for viewing,
that's
them,
right,
together as one.
They're
separate organizations. They stand and fall separately.
Right, and you're treating them separately, and you're saying CHP is not an owner, as,
correct,
defined, and it's not an presently organized and operating exclusively as a charity. Therefore, it doesn't fall within the Articles of Incorporation of PHP. Therefore, I can't get the money.
That's correct. And moreover, the economic relationship between the two organizations was specified in a contract, and PHP has upheld its bargain. It has paid CHP every penny that CHP is entitled to.
So it's not a, CHP is not a debtor of PHP, or PHP is not a debtor of CHP.
To the extent it was, they've been paid. I believe they filed a claim or were otherwise paid in the ongoing liquidation or in that role, in that capacity.
The contract has been satisfied.
Absolutely. That's correct. That's correct.
And the reason we're talking about 61721 is because there's a question raised as to having given notice to the commissioner.
And well, yes.
And that they and didn't give notice.
They did not give notice in accordance with the requirements. And the order that was in place relating to CHP's operations couldn't be more clear. It specifically prohibits distributions to the corporate member without advance notice and approval by the Commissioner of Insurance.
Before this statute, Superior Insurance Company, may have been a Superior Mutual Insurance Company, went belly up. And the law firm in which I was a member at the time was appointed by the Commissioner of Insurance to liquidate it. There were no statutes, and we flew by the seat of our pants. That's a new legal definition. And in effect, there was no board of directors of Superior. The liquidator of Superior, and I don't know if we were liquidator or a counsel or both, just took over, paid the claims. That was not a charitable organization. No board of directors was there anymore because the corporation was really gone. And this whole 645 was an outgrowth of the experiences with Superior, and then there was another insolvent insurance company, so that they needed to put in a statute that would, in effect, authorize the takeover of an insolvent insurance company.
Well, I think that's fair. Reading Chapter 645, you quickly come to the realization that it is meant to be a comprehensive set of procedures to apply to liquidate an insurance company. There isn't anything left out of 645 that is necessary.
Now, I have not gone through the commissioner's materials and the materials of the drafter here. Have you on 645? Because ordinarily they're quite rich in the goals and the interpretation.
I believe I did narrowly with the idea of seeing if there was any guidance about what yeah. owner meant. And this Chapter 645 is also a version of a uniform act that has been adopted in a number of states. And again, I could find no authority in any other state.
What's the name of the act? Do you remember? I'll find it.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Not a problem.
And so I found no other authority on guidance on what ownership meant, especially in the context of a charitable organization, which again is. In a for-profit organization, the concept of ownership is relatively easy to figure out. Everybody's acquainted with it. We know who the owners of a company are. But when you switch to the charitable world, it is not so obvious that there is an owner, and our position is that there is not, that you cannot own a charity in the sense that you are entitled to the money when it goes away.
Counsel, one other thing on the notice requirement. Your objection is that it was not reported on Form D and that it did not identify the amount of the distribution. Is that correct?
Among others, yes, but it did not comply with the specific procedure under which notice is to be given.
Right. So what, aside from not being reported on Form D and not identifying the amount of the distribution, what were the other deficiencies?
It had nothing about the date of the distribution. I can't off the top of my head recall, but the list of information included on Form D is the date of distribution, the form of distribution, the amount of the distribution, perhaps something about the purpose, none of which was, purpose may have been included, but nothing else was included.
All right, so a little bit earlier when we were talking about whether if the board still existed, it would have any residual authority to identify the recipient. Let's say that's so. Why would it be improper notice to the commissioner if, in sending the company into liquidation proceedings, they say, and at the very tag end, here's what to do with the surplus? We don't know how much that's going to be. There might not be any at all. We don't know when that's going to be. But whenever it happens and whatever's left, it goes here. Why is that not sufficient?
Well, I don't think it would fall within Chapter 617, which applies to transactions between affiliates. I'm not sure it would apply at all. It's only the insider nature of the transaction that requires it to be reported.
So it's because they designated CHP that the reporting requirement comes into play?
Correct, yes.
If chosen someplace else, then you would have just said, well, okay, here's what PHP said it should go to, and that's what we'll do.
I think that's probably right, again, as long as the resolution was at the conclusion of the proceeding and didn't try to insert itself into the order of payment or anything else that is the commissioner's and the liquidation court's responsibility. I think had they just simply designated an unrelated charity that otherwise qualified at the outside, that would have been permissible under their Articles of Incorporation, and I don't think that would have been impermissible under Chapter 645.
Counsel, issue two is whether the commissioner, as PHP, Wistat 645 liquidator, has the authority to recommend which charity receives, etc. In the Court of Appeals opinion, footnote 3, which attaches to paragraph 7, the Court of Appeals said, look, I think essentially saying it's kind of not right for us, but it says, look, the circuit court didn't address this issue yet. That which was appealed from the circuit court did not contain this issue. And therefore, the issues are not before this court on appeal, and we're not addressing them. So why should we address it?
I'm out of time.
Go ahead and answer.
Happy to answer your question if you wish, but otherwise I am
go
out
ahead
of time.
And answer her question.
Okay. I'm not sure you should. I think the Court of Appeals is probably right that technically the circuit court didn't rule on that and the commissioner has not yet acted on that. But I do think in the interest of judicial economy, it's an issue that should you decide to take up, you certainly have the ability to do so. And I don't think it's a difficult issue. I think that it's quite straightforward. The 645-44 says that upon the conclusion of the liquidation, there is a dissolution of the insurance company. So to think that the commissioner doesn't have the ability to act on anything involved in a dissolution would be to ignore the exclusive jurisdiction of the commissioner and the liquidation court in the proceeding. Clearly, Chapter 645 is designed to catch everything possible that needs to be done in order to finish up the affairs of the insurance company. If the insurance company's assets need to be distributed to a charity, that would be included, and I don't see that as, frankly, a particularly difficult question to answer.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Keller? Counsel, same question to you. Normally we don't give advisory opinions. Why should we be addressing issue number two? And part of that then is why shouldn't it follows? Why shouldn't we be in accord with the footnote set forth in footnote 3 of the Court of Appeals opinion. The Circuit Court didn't yet make this determination. This isn't in the order appealed from the Circuit Court to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals didn't address this issue. So why should we?
Well, I believe the Court of Appeals kind of skirted the issue, I think, because it was clearly implied in the holding of the Circuit Court. The Circuit Court, quoted part of the oral hearing, and the Circuit Court basically said, here's what happens. The commissioner decides who should get the funds. The commissioner puts that in the final accounting, the final report, and I'll decide if that's who should get it. And he didn't address that issue straight ahead in his written decision, but I think it was clearly part and parcel of what he was deciding. Because if the commissioner does not have that authority, then what happens to those funds? And I think the only thing that happens to them in that situation is they go to the state treasury as unclaimed funds. So I would like to just address a couple of points. You know, Justice Abramson brought up whether there's any statutory history on this, and I was reviewing the In Re AMBAC Assurance Corp. decision this morning in preparation, and I noticed that they did quote some parts of 167 WIS Laws Chapter 89, which created WIS Stat Chapter 645. And at least what they quote a comment that says, in part, when an insurer must be liquidated, the outcome is often tragic. It becomes apparent that claims that are socially more important need to be paid ahead of those that are less important. Then there's an ellipsis. In an effort to minimize the harm done by liquidation, and that word is italicized, and especially to lessen it for those persons least able to bear it, much thought and consultation went into the structuring of the priority system. So I think that gives an indication that that priority distribution section in section 645.68 is to be taken quite seriously. And to the extent, then, that paying funds in the liquidation to a 501c3 that does not fit in that category, rather than pay the funds over to the owner, is really kind of stretching beyond, I think, what the statutory intent is.
Counsel, let's assume we agree with you that the commissioner does not have the authority to direct the surplus funds to a charitable organization, but we disagree with you on whether CHP is an owner. That appears to leave the surplus funds going to the Department of Revenue. Would that be, given those parameters, would that be a correct resolution?
I think that would be.
Okay.
And that'd be one of those tragic outcomes, I'm afraid. But, yes. And also, I wanted to just touch on how the entities were formed. Because CHP was established in 1998 and was just a standalone charitable entity, it formed PHP in 2005. And in doing so, it made a $1.8 million contribution to PHP to fund it. So that also brings in this concept, it seems to me. It supports the idea that CHP is the owner. It made a huge investment in this entity, obviously for purposes that it had, it was valuable to what CHP was doing, and it served that function. And then a couple of years later, in 2007, it formed LTS as its charitable operations were developing. I think I want to touch shortly or quickly on this idea of defining owner under the ordinary definition of it. The commissioner is arguing basically that we don't care what the definitions say, owner does not include charities. And it seems to me that's an extraordinary statement if what the court is trying to do is ascertain what the ordinary meaning of the term is. The legislature could have solved this thing very easily. They could have said, owner does not include charities, period. Or owners do not include members of 501c3 organizations. Bingo, we're done. We know where we're at. But it didn't do that. And I think it's in a pickle because, as counsel mentioned, under 645.44, the entity, the insurance company, is dissolved. It doesn't survive the process. So what happens in that situation? If this were a Chapter 127, we'd be okay, because when Mr. Polsky gets done paying all the claims of creditors and administrative claims, if there's money left under Section 128.17, it goes back to the debtor. The debtor still is there. It hasn't dissolved. It's got a board of directors. And if it needs to, whatever it needs to do with those surplus funds, it can do. And I think
so
it's just
Who gets this? If CHP can pay off all of its debts, who gets what's left over?
What happens then, Your Honor, is that the CHP board has the same obligations as the PHP board.
To give it to a charity.
Give it to a charity. That's correct.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your arguments this afternoon. We'll meet at the court in the next couple of minutes for your calendars. Have a nice day.
It's no sense us bringing that calendar when